And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to this post-spring ball edition. Spring game has come and gone. We've seen Snowmageddon come through, and I've received 21 inches of snow here in the North Minneapolis area. Luke, how much did you guys get out in Roseville?
I don't actually know. I'd say somewhere around like 16, 15, maybe. I don't know. I really am not even going to speculate. My snowblower is so pathetic that I had to snowblow like three times, so just to keep up. But yeah,
it just couldn't toss the heavy snow or what?
No, it's just the opening is only able to take about, you know, 6 to 8 inches. So yeah,
go on.
Eventually starts going over the top.
So. Are we not doing phrasing, by the way? Is this not a phrasing podcast?
What do you mean phrasing?
Think about what you just said. We're going to move past it, and I hope people are giggling into their headphones, whether at work or in the car, because phrasing. It's an Archer reference. One day, Luke, one day you'll get it. So
yep.
We got some recruiting to talk about post-Max Duggan. We've got a commitment and Tyler Newbin to talk about. We have
the spring game that almost never was.
That's an interesting story. I mean, I can get into that here to start. It went with, so the week leading up to the spring game, on Monday, I think Monday, you saw Iowa State takes notice of that. I think Tuesday, Wisconsin cancels their spring game. And Minnesota's really like, all right, we got to figure out what's going on here because Saturday's coming and we've already seen two of our neighboring states cancel their spring game. So what we saw was Minnesota and the sports information department and PJ Fleck kind of come together and be like, I know PJ was adamant that he didn't want this thing canceled. He's like, well, it's Minnesota. Can't we just play through the snow? And then they showed him the forecast. He was like, ooh, not great, not great. So they ended up moving it to Thursday. PJ was able to work his schedule around it, the team schedule around it. I believe they had their final spring practice in the last 24 hours here. All the coaches are out on the road now except PJ, as PJ can't go on the road right now. So, again, it didn't sound like canceling the spring game was ever an option. PJ was not going to cancel it. So they ended up moving it to Thursday night. I think there's probably – I'm terrible at guesstimating crowds – 2,500 Gopher fans there in attendance.
But the real question, right? The real question: were you team gold or team maroon?
I had a beer bet, or an adult beverage bet anyway, with Randy Johnson of the Star Tribune. He took the maroon -3, and I took the gold. He set the line. I saw that. I saw who the quarterbacks were for gold, and I put my money behind Zach Anixon and Vic Biramontes. So.
All right.
Looks like I came out ahead there. So next time we're out on the road covering a game, Randy's going to have to owe me a nice adult beverage.
Oh, that's nice. Okay. So let's talk a little bit recruiting. I know that's something you wanted to cover. A lot has kind of transpired since then. They got a high-rated defensive recruit. Missed out on a quarterback, apparently. As you know, I don't follow this stuff terribly closely. But let's get into some of this recruiting thing.
Yeah, last time we were on this podcast, I was hyping up the Max Duggan coming
to
visit. And, you know, everybody had indicated my sources, Steve Wiltfong, the National Scouting Director for 24/7 Sports, his sources. Everybody was like, Minnesota's the leader going into the final visit. Minnesota thinks the visit goes as well as it can. And we get word Monday morning, TCU is the leader. And I'm sitting over here like flabbergasted thinking, what in the world? And it ends up that post-Max Duggan gate, he ends up staying with TCU. And it was strange. I've been talking with Gobi about it, just the way things went. Again, everything, if you read Tea Leaves, you know, MV of DT and that great website back in the day, I remember he used to have the Thursday reading Tea Leaves pieces. And, I mean, for my 7 years or however long I've been in this, everything seemed to line up to where this was going to happen. As I said, my sources, Steve's sources, everybody was like, this Minnesota's the leader. It's the last visit. Minnesota's been on him longer than anybody else. This is his fourth or fifth visit. Mom's coming back for the first time. And it just didn't work out. Even after the visit, you know, Max comes out and says, I'm going to kind of figure it out with my family for the next 2 weeks. So I'm going to go quiet. Well, true story, he didn't go quiet with Minnesota. You know, he was in basically daily or, you know, every other day contact with PJ Fleck or somebody from the Minnesota staff. And it just didn't make any sense. That again, if this kid is so set on TCU, why is he still having this amount of communication with Minnesota?
Right.
And, you know, what the folks on GI kind of came up to was, and I like the opinion of it too. Again, Duggan didn't know how to say no to Fleck. And he ultimately did have to do it. Again, he's built a relationship with his coach over the last 15 months, and he didn't know how to say no. So, and unfortunately for Minnesota, they miss out on Max Duggan. And so it's not great. I mean, it's a blow because TCU, you know, offers him in January. Their coaches stopped by the school then. You know, he'd been to Minnesota multiple times by then. Minnesota had been on him for essentially a year before that. PJ had been down to the school about three times to show Duggan how much of a priority he was. And again, it's coming back to, you know, what does Minnesota have to do to kind of land a stud quarterback like that? And it's tough coming off a 5-7 win season. You're in year two. TCU's had a lot of sustained success in recent years with Gary Patterson. And again, the other argument, Luke, that was brought up to me was, again, you look at Minnesota's depth chart, and you look at TCU's depth chart after they've signed, I think, back-to-back years of four-star passers, and you look at Minnesota's with Tanner Morgan, Victor Amontes, Zanak Anikstead, you don't have a single quarterback on the roster that's thrown a Division I pass in the forward direction. You'd think it would work out for Minnesota, but it didn't. I mean, you kind of, with the 10,000-foot view, and you're not entrenched in this, as I was, I mean, what were your thoughts on Duggan deciding to head to Fort Worth?
Well, as you know, I'm not a recruiting expert by any means. I don't follow it particularly close. I mean, I keep enough of a pulse on it to kind of know, you know, when your schedule is going to be interrupted by commitments so we can podcast and whatnot. But I mean, for the most part, you know, looking, you know, 10,000 feet away, I see a quarterback already committed to Minnesota, and it's a position on a team that basically one guy plays. I know that we've had the back and forth about, you know, always someone is going to have to play. There's always going to have to be two guys that play, you know, injury wise. It seems like that never seems to end. But at the same time, it's like, there's already one in this class. How many quarterbacks do you really take per class? I just wonder how much the Cole Kramer commitment impacted the Duggan commitment. Maybe this is, you know, way too much logical thought, and there's not that much, there's really not anything to that, but I have to imagine that played at least a minor influence in his decision.
I'm sure it did. And even going back a few months before that, people remember Graham Mertz, a 2019 quarterback, camped at Minnesota.
Oh, sure.
His dad went to Minnesota, and Graham was still in decision mode. Minnesota offers him. And then Cole Kramer commits, and then it comes out that Graham Mertz wants to be the lone quarterback commitment in whatever class or whatever school he goes to. And so that played a decision in him choosing Wisconsin over Minnesota. Now, I don't think Graham Mertz is ultimately going to end up at Wisconsin, as he has shown a lot of interest at other schools and different things like that. But again, I think with like a Graham Mertz, Cole Kramer being committed absolutely played a part in it. Now, on the flip side of the coin, you look at Cole Kramer. He doesn't have another offer from anyone. You know, some of that is he is from Minnesota. Some of that is what other schools are going to come in and offer him, knowing that damn well that he has wanted to be a Gopher for a very long time. And so their offer would essentially be a moot point at this. It, you know, Cole's offense doesn't help him at all. Everybody, I'm sure, listening to this knows what Eden Prairie runs. Not exactly a passing mecca there with the Eden Prairie Eagles, but you know, again, I think I've said this on this podcast multiple times that I am absolutely higher on Cole Kramer than 95% of people. I've seen him in person three different times. I'm going to be able to see him here in a couple weeks when he competes in UA Chicago. He's going to go to the Elite 11 camp out in Columbus, hoping to get invited to the big camp at the end of the summer. Again, I think Cole Kramer is going to surprise some folks. But in terms of how did Max Duggan perceive Cole Kramer, I don't think he really perceived him as much. And so I don't really think it played a huge part into that decision. But basically, with quarterback recruiting now going forward, you look at, you know, does Minnesota have to take another quarterback in this class? No. And I think that's large in part to what people were able to see on Thursday night with Zanak Anikstead, Victor Amontes, and Tanner Morgan. I think people are or the staff is high on what the with the guys they have, especially a guy like Zach Anikstad. Now, again, folks think of him as the walk-on, but remember, Zach Anikstad decided to walk on at Minnesota over scholarship offers from the University of Pittsburgh and Illinois. So he chooses Minnesota to walk on to compete. Again, this is a kid that's been very driven. He's from the Mankato area, excuse me. His brother's on the team. So, again, I don't think Minnesota necessarily has to, and my sources confirm that. Now, do I think they will ultimately? Yes. Kirk Shiraka is heading out on the road now because it is essentially just kind of a reset because they had put in so much time into Max Duggan. Now, is Hank Bachmeier still an option? That depends on who you ask. I know that there is I shouldn't say miscommunication or disconnect because that's not the case, but there needs to be a coming to kind of Jesus moment of where's everybody at here? Because there were so many different things that have happened with Hank Bachmeier in Minnesota in the last few months that I think Hank is still an option, but I don't see that eventually paying off for Minnesota. So I do think Minnesota eventually takes a quarterback to pair with Cole Kremer. Now, as to who that may be, I mean, that's going to be the fun of trying to figure that out here in the next week or two as Kirk Shiraka hits the road and evaluates quarterbacks. And that's exactly why you need to be on clicking on Go for Illustrated every day is Gobi and I can assure you have the most connected sources in Minnesota Golden Gopher football. So it'll be interesting, Luke, but it's certainly a blow when Max Duggan decided to go to Texas Christian.
So one other thing, I don't know anything about Texas Christian at all, but do they have a bunch of guys there? I think you maybe said they have a couple quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, they had Andy Dalton. They had Trayvon Boykin.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying like currently on their roster that he's going to compete with.
They have the guys that are there are young. And again, I'm not in elite Texas Christian football mind, but yeah, just from talking with, you know, the Texas Christian people throughout the Max Duggan gate, they have 2 4 stars that are young.
Okay, so he's obviously not scared of competition. That's pretty obvious. So maybe I've debunked my theory on, you know, there being another guy in the class already or even, you know, competition that exists. So I don't know. I'm just curious. And the other thing I'm curious is right now, like, what is your perception on the quarterbacks as a whole? Like, you've seen them through the spring game now. Like, we know they haven't thrown a forward pass. Are you still worried? Do you think the talent is better than in years past? I'm just totally curious. I really don't have an opinion.
Yeah. I mean, before I get to quarterbacks, I do just want to briefly touch on Tyler Newbin, the new defensive back commitment that Minnesota has received before we kind of get to spring ball thoughts. Tyler Newbin chooses Minnesota over Michigan, Michigan State, Illinois, Iowa State, Purdue, Iowa, Northwestern, Tennessee, among others. Tyler is someone that is the second highest rated defensive commitment for Minnesota since 2010. So he is the second highest rated defensive commitment in the last 8 years. He's the fifth highest rated DB in the internet era for Minnesota to get. Again, Tyler is 6'2", 190 pounds, someone that I know Alan True has been able to see multiple times. And he's flat out told our board at Gopher Illustrated that from his sources on different staffs throughout the Midwest that multiple Midwest staffs had him as the top overall cornerback in the Midwest. So for Minnesota to be able to beat out all those schools for Tyler is a huge get. Minnesota's through the roof about it. Now, I don't know if Tyler stays at cornerback long term. He's absolutely going to start there, but safety may be in his future. So as we kind of switch over to quarterbacks, I feel pretty good about quarterback right now. I think what you saw in the spring game, and you kind of go through the stats, let's start with who I think is still the lead signal caller right now, and that's Tanner Morgan. You saw what he was able to do during the spring game, 18 for 28 for 272 yards and 2 passing touchdowns. I don't believe he did a whole lot with his legs. He did have a 15-yard run. What you saw with Tanner during the spring game is it wasn't great to start, especially when opening series, it's looking like Minnesota from 2017 where Tanner throws 2 passes and then it results in 2 drops. But you definitely saw him kind of try to build a rapport with guys like Tyler Johnson and Demetrius Douglas. Both of them combined for over 50% of Tanner Morgan's passes. And again, what you saw with Tanner is I just thought you saw a lot of consistency. And that's something that Minnesota really values. And I think what makes Tanner different than the other two quarterbacks right now is when Tanner feels pressure, He's not flustered, especially for a guy who hasn't thrown a Division I pass yet. He rolls out to either side, and you're able to see him keep his eyes down the field. Now, is he athletic enough to use his legs and get a first down? Absolutely, I think he is. I think he's absolutely more athletic than Connor Rota, and I think he's on that Demry Croft level. I don't think Demry Croft was overly athletic, but I think that Tanner is definitely on the same level as what I think Demry can be. And even on the highlight play to Tyler Johnson, which I'm sure everybody here has watched five different times, where Tanner receives pressure, he rolls out to his right, he hits Tyler Johnson for the one-handed catch on the sidelines for the touchdown. Again, he's able to roll out, and his eyes remain downfield. I mean, you've seen Gopher quarterbacks in the last 2-3 years receive pressure or feel any kind of pressure, and they immediately tuck the ball and run, and their eyes aren't downfield, and they're missing guys. So I think Tanner Morgan, I still believe he is the front runner for the job, but I think it's going to be interesting here because I think Zach Anikstead showed some things on that Thursday spring game, because PJ had been talking him up the week before. And here we are that Zach Anikstead got 18 passing attempts and Vic only had 3. Mm-hmm. Now, for those who haven't watched the spring game, they're looking at the stats saying, well, why did Zach Anikstead throw the ball 15 more times than Vic Biramontes? Well, it has a little something to do with the fumble rooski.
Yeah.
Because that was some of the strangest. I haven't seen something like that in a long time, where Minnesota quarterbacks literally just couldn't hold on to the ball. I believe Tanner Morgan had 3 fumbles. I'm trying to find the stats here so I can.
Well, I was gonna say when it comes to the fumbles, I mean, I thought this program was all about, you know, the ball is the program.
The ball is the program.
So I feel like there's some changing of the best that needs to happen here, especially yes. Going into the season. Otherwise, we've got a serious turnover issue.
We do. I mean, it was just strange because I hadn't seen the fumble being an issue throughout the entire spring. Now, that being said, we hadn't seen quarterbacks being live, and I believe Vic had 3 fumbles on 4 passing attempts. So it's tough to give Vic, you know, more reps when Zach was playing as well as he was, and Vic just couldn't hold on to the ball. So I think Anikstead has firmly planted himself in that race as well. But I don't know.
One other thing I wanted to say, because you subtly brought it up, but how much did you like that they actually could hit the quarterback? I
wanted to see that.
Yeah, now, I love that.
Yes. Now, is it scary? Because, again, you don't want to get somebody hurt, but you also need to get your quarterbacks live reps, especially with where Minnesota's at right now.
For sure.
It's not like we're going into year 3 of Mitch Leidner and we know what we're going to get. We don't know what we're going to get with any of these 3 quarterbacks, and they need to see live bullets to help further their development. And so you saw guys like Tanner Morgan and Zach Anikstead kind of shine through that, where Vic needs to – again, adjust to the collegiate level and kind of remember that clock that should be always ticking in your head. It needs to go a little bit faster now because these guys are a little bit different than the California junior colleges. But that being said, I think the first play of Vic Biramontes in the spring game was him taking off for 16 yards. Now, the offense is going to be significantly different if Vic Biramontes is in or Tanner Morgan's in or even Zach Anikstead's in, because Tanner kind of brings more to the table passing-wise. Vic is obviously one of the most athletic guys on the team. Again, I compared him to Chris Streveler, and I think that's a very good comparison for it. You know, what I heard for those who did watch the game, and I believe BTN, was Glenn Mason was comparing Vic Biramontes to what recent Gopher quarterback, which left my head scratching. Take a guess.
It was Mitch Leidner. I heard it too.
Andy Greeter turned to me and he goes, Glenn Mason just compared Vic to a recent Gopher quarterback. Who do you think it was? I go, Chris Streveler. He goes, Mitch Leidner. I go, what in the – I don't understand that at all. Now, Glenn Mason has made a significant amount of money coaching college football, but I don't see Mitch Leidner and Vic Biramontes at all.
No, I don't.
I would be very curious. I have not listened to what Glenn Mason's reasonings were, but I don't know how you can't look at Vic and think Chris Streveler.
He was big, runs – that was about it.
Well, Mitch is 6'4". Vic Biramontes is 6'1".
No, yeah. I mean, that was basically it. He's like, you know, big player.
He's big,
runs.
Big, and he likes to run?
Yeah, that was basically it.
I don't think of Mitch Leidner as a tuck and run quarterback, but again, that's here nor there. But I think to kind of round out quarterback here, Luke, Zach Anikstead was impressive. For a kid who should be going to prom this week.
Right.
For a kid that, again, his backstory is just so interesting. And PJ kind of talked about it. I know we've talked about it. Zach Anixter, when he went to IMG Academy in Florida, the kind of powerhouse high school mecca of high school football, he went as the backup to a kid. I forget the kid's name. He was a highly rated kid going to Miami. He was like a top 100 player. And then Zach Anixter surpassed him. I mean, by midseason, Zach was so good in practice, he benched the Miami kid. The Miami kid got his scholarship pulled because of Zach Anixter, and the kid eventually ended up, his name, you know, I remembered his name, but I just don't think it's kind. Again, if you want to do the legwork there, well, that's up to you. But again, the kid got his scholarship pulled from the University of Miami, Florida, because of Zach Anixter's play, and he ended up at Jerry Kill at Rutgers. So again, it's not like the kid just fell off the face of the earth. He went to a Big Ten institution. But Zach has just been surpassing expectations for the last 18 months. And again, does Zach have some things to work on? Absolutely. But I think you see that there may be some young quarterback talent here, and that's something that we haven't been able to say at Minnesota for quite a few years, and that's why PJ Fleck and Kirk Ciarrocca are here.
Well, you know that, you know what that story about Zach Anixter going now to ING Academy reminds me of, right? It's another now tight end on the Gopher roster.
Oh, that's right. We got to talk Seth Green, tight end receiver man now.
Yeah, because like he went, you know, he moved, but that was because his family moved, right? And so he went to huge Humango High School, and then ends up basically not losing a scholarship, but like, you
well,
know,
he's committed to Oregon, to
right?
Play
as a quarterback.
And he doesn't beat out the other quarterback at Allen, Texas.
That's it.
And Oregon's like, hey, you can stay committed, but we want you as a tight end. Seth says no. Ken's in Minnesota.
Right.
Evident basically from day one that he wasn't going to play.
Which for a guy who's now been playing tight end for what, like two practices?
For like 2 weeks, and he's got three practices under his belt.
He looked okay.
Oh, I think Seth Green is absolutely I pose this question to other members of the media.
Okay.
Is Seth Green gonna have double digit catches this fall? Because I would put the over on that.
Yeah, he looked okay considering how little he's played tight end. I was impressed.
And I know the staff is impressed as well, because the come to Jesus moment with Seth was PJ pulled Seth into his office. It's like, hey, you see where you're at on the quarterback depth chart. You see where we're at in desperate need of playmakers. Can and will you move to tight end / wide receiver? Seth said yes. And again, I know people that have seen him practice since he's been at, you know, wide receiver / tight end. I don't really think it matters. Whatever you want to call him, I'm just going to call him a pass catcher.
Let's call him an athlete, because that's what he is.
He's a pass catching athlete that Minnesota sorely needs. And I think his emergence at tight end, especially since I think he's a redshirt sophomore. Again, he's going to allow Minnesota, in my opinion, to redshirt Brevin Spanford, which is going to be nice. It's just because I think their skill sets and their physical appearances are so similar, and they provide what Minnesota needs. I think you're able to redshirt Brevin Spanford because you're going to have Seth Green kind of being your big-bodied wide receiver athlete pass catcher, because from what I heard in practice, I mean, he was going up over defensive backs, making plays when Minnesota needed to make those plays. So I think you're able to kind of see that emergence. So I'm happy for Seth that he finally switched positions, because I absolutely think he's going to see the field this fall because of the need of pass catchers.
All right, let's talk a little bit about playmakers, and I want to give you a little bit of grief. I think I heard you say on multiple occasions that Chris Ottman Bell was going to be making in traffic catches more often than we'd seen. That did not happen in that spring.
It wasn't great. It wasn't great to start, but I will say this: towards the end, you saw Chris Ottman Bell start to put it together.
I agree. Yeah.
He was targeted 9 times. And unfortunately, he didn't come down with a few catches in traffic. Again, he is a redshirt freshman. Are those plays I've seen him make 70% of the time in practice that he was converting at a 30% clip under the lights? Yes. So, again, you were able to see with Chris Ottman Bell that he was able to gain separation. He was able to kind of get deep on the receivers. Because I think the plan for – and the ideal plan for Minnesota's passing game this fall is this. You have Chris Ottman Bell as your X receiver, along with Rashad Bateman being your guys that can stretch the field. Because contrary to popular belief, Tyler Johnson is not a field stretcher, even though we've talked about it on this podcast, Luke. Somehow he was able to reel off 70-yard touchdowns And I'm sitting here shaking my head like, this kid's a 4'7", 4'8", 40 guy.
Come on, that's a function though of the scheme that they're running, right? Because everybody
Tyler's able to break some tackles, and then it just happens to be the safety isn't anywhere near him, but can't gain ground.
But it's also man to man coverage where he beats the guy, and he's got one guy to beat, and they weren't respecting Minnesota's ability to pass, especially early. And by the way, I still love those crossing routes. Boy, that's just such an improvement.
It is, and so I think if you have Chris Ottman Bell and Rashad Bateman on the outside, kind of stretching the field, that allows you to have Tyler Johnson, Demetrius Douglas, Tyler Johnson and Demetrius Douglas combining for 11 catches for 191 yards and two scores, which is exactly what you wanted to see. And then you also have Seth Green in the mix there, plus the other tight ends.
I still don't want to diminish Philip Howard. I still think this guy he's like close. If he can stay healthy,
that has been his biggest issue is,
yeah,
I think that was his second or third spring ball, and I have yet to see him practice more than once or twice consecutively.
Yep.
In spring ball is because he always seems to come up with a, kind of a soft tissue injury. So that's something he's got to overcome if he's going to firmly be in that mix with those five other guys.
I agree with you. And then there's the concussion piece where, he got lit up a couple times last year. But that said, like he had a couple plays. Like if he makes that one catch on the crossing route, gosh, he could be gone. I just like him as an athlete. I know I've kind of tabbed him as my guy as of last year. So maybe I'm not looking at this with objective eyes, but I still like him. I think he's got potential, especially as that kind of shifty Z.
Yeah. So again, I think that especially with Tyler, you saw what he was able to do. I think his second touchdown, obviously not as impressive, but the way that Tanner was able to hit him. And so again, a pass where only Tyler Johnson is able to make it. Tyler goes outside of his catch radius, catches it, toe taps it, corner of the end zone, touchdown. Again, that's exactly what you want to see from Morgan and Tyler Johnson. So
yeah. And great route. It was a great route by Tyler.
Again,
Johnson.
I think playmakers are going to be better pass catching wise. Now, running wise, Rodney Smith got, six touches, and I think that was four too many.
Yeah.
Because first touch for Rodney Smith, I believe he reels off a 16-yard run, and then he gets a 56-yard kind of catch across the middle, which, once again, Tanner Morgan keeps his eyes downfield, finds Rodney Smith, Rodney does the rest. And then for some ungodly reason, keep him in the second quarter and I couldn't fathom. I'm thinking to myself, what does Rodney Smith have to prove today? He's already got a circus touchdown, and then he turns the corner, goes 31 for another touchdown. I'm thinking to myself, what if he comes in for another down? I am going down onto the field and yelling at Flex saying, do you understand what you have at running back? Because you don't have Kobe McCrary. You don't have Shannon Brooks. Now, I know that folks are pretty high on Mohamed Ibrahim after seeing him in person for the first time, 19 carries for 104 yards. And, again, I think he's fine. But I don't think he's the next coming of Rodney Smith or Shannon Brooks.
No, I agree.
Which is immediately why I believe Bryce Williams or Nolan Edmonds will have to come in and play day one. And I think they're absolutely going to give him a run for his money. Because what you're going to get with Mohamed Ibrahim, and you saw it on display Thursday night, he's a 5'8 north-south runner, can make a man miss. There's no deep speed. He's a short yardage back because, he's not a guy you're going to flip it to on some kind of a screen, and he's going to get you, be shifty Jeff Jones-like, and get you the home run. Mohamed Ibrahim is a solid double.
Right.
Whereas I think Bryce Williams could get you the triple or the home run. So, again, it's nice to see that from Ibrahim, especially knowing that he's probably going to have to take some carries because Minnesota's losing 40% of their carries from last year with Brooks out and McCrary graduated. So, again, just overall kind of pass catching wise, from what I saw at six different spring practices in the spring game, I feel better about Minnesota at the pass catcher position than I did this time last year because I think they have more weapons. But as Luke alluded to, like Chris Ottman Bell, he is going to be young and he's going to take his lumps. But again, I think he's just scratching the surface there. I think that Demetrius Douglas can provide something across the middle and short and intermediate routes. Tyler Johnson can continue to take the next step. And then I think the wild cards here that are kind of going to determine things are what can Rashad Bateman bring you as a true freshman, and what can Seth Green bring you as a mismatch? Because I do absolutely think he can be a mismatch somewhere on the field that Kirk Schrock is going to have to utilize.
Yeah. One thing that kind of stuck out to me just from the passing standpoint, one, ratio is like, you know, the gold team had 35 rushing attempts with 21 passing attempts. So we're getting closer to 50-50. And then you look at it, but then you look at the Maroon squad. I think it was, yeah, it was the Maroon squad, 28 passing attempts to 30 rushing attempts. I really like the balance. The other thing is I really liked how Tanner Morgan distributed the ball. You've got guys with 9 targets, 6 targets, 5 targets, 4, and a couple guys with 1 target each. The more we can distribute the ball, especially to athletes, the more difficult we are to defend. You know, Derek talks about this all the time, but you know, the more you can stretch it out and make them make defenses have to defend you, you know, sideline to sideline, the more prevalent and efficient you can become as an offense. And I'm looking forward. I know that's the goal of this offense. They have to get the right playmakers, you know, to be able to make those kind of plays. But I think we're trending in the right direction in this second spring game of the PJ Fleck era.
I agree. And again, that was more of a game than we've seen, you know, a spring game than we've seen in a long time. So I know that there were even some folks angry about, wow, we want to see more. Why didn't we see kickoffs? Folks, you're going to see
We saw a freaking tight end pass. What else do you want? Attempted tight end pass.
I'm sitting over here scratching my face, just facepalming, like, just calm down. Like, you saw live quarterbacks. Like, we haven't seen that in quite some time. And now it's something that was needed. And I think Minnesota kind of addressed it. So it's.
Yeah,
we'll see.
It was good. We do need to talk some defense, though, because we've done none of that. Surprising. We didn't talk any defense. I am a little surprised by that. This is what I'll say. I thought the tackling at times was horrendous.
Well, yes. And I'm going to put an asterisk by that because go back and you watch the big plays, like Tyler Johnson going over Antonio Chenault. I think we've talked about what I think and what Derek thinks, even what you think Chenault's ceiling is. I think in an ideal defense, I don't think Chenault is starting. I can get into that a little bit later if folks want me to, but or even on Rodney Smith turning the corner, he turned the corner on Danny Anderson, a walk-on linebacker.
How about Tony Durr? I was going to say both of his touchdowns. They were both like there should have been.
They were walk-on guys in the secondary.
Yeah,
you know it's and then Tony Durr got the corner turned on by Rodney Smith, which I don't know that Coney's ever going to be 100% coming off that ACL. I mean, that's what it told me. He should be right now, and for him not to be able to kind of accelerate and cut Rodney off there makes me
I don't know if he saw him, actually, but that's...
Either way, it doesn't matter.
But here's the thing that I took away. I thought defensive line-wise, especially defensive end guys, like they look more the part of a defensive end. Am I crazy with that? Like I thought not, and I'm saying more physically than you know, what they accomplished on the field, but more physically, I think they look the part of a modern day collegiate defensive end.
I mean, the two guys that at least on Gopher Illustrated kind of stole the show were Boye Mafe and Teyon Devers.
Yeah.
Boye Mafe being the Hopkins redshirt freshman has 2 tackles for loss, a forced fumble, and he had a sack as well. Again, Boye physically, I think, he could use another 12 to 18 months in the weight room to bulk up his upper body because he's kind of got like an hourglass shaped body where his, you know, his upper body's big and then he's got really narrow hips and then it kind of bulks out again.
He's got the frame.
He does. He absolutely has the frame and the get off has never been an issue. And you were able to see Boye kind of give some of the offensive tackles a run for their money. Then you also saw Teyon Devers. I mean, again, on the stat sheet, only 2 tackles and 1 tackle for loss, but I believe he forced a fumble as well. He was able to turn the corner. So you're looking at guys trying to help at defensive end, help Carter Coughlin, help Ezi Owatumu, another guy that folks were able to see for the first time. Again, if Boye Mafe and Teyon Devers are going to show up like this come September, then hell yeah, I feel a lot better about defensive end. But those were the first, you know, these were the first flashes I was able to see this spring that Mafe and Devers, now again, maybe it's because the bright lights were on, they were 100% engaged, and it's tough to get going on Tuesday and Thursday practices, but I want to see that a lot more consistently before I start to get my hopes up there about defensive end. But I hope Boye Mafe and Teyon Devers bring it like they did on Thursday night. I hope they put that into their weight room and their speed and agility stuff here for the next 4 months before fall camp, because if they do, I mean, Minnesota's going to be able to rush the passer with four, and that's something they sorely needed to do last fall.
A couple guys that stick out on the stat sheet to me, high school senior Thomas Rush. He seemed to be in on just about every tackle, tallied a 9 total, 3 solo. Also had a pass breakup, which was pretty impressive. Another guy that I was impressed with that didn't get a lot of run last year was Julian Huff. I thought he had a nice looking game. What'd you think on the gold side?
Thomas Rush. I got a couple of text messages from some Gopher fans during the game saying Thomas Rush is the real deal. And Thomas Rush for me may be the surprise of the defense from the spring for me. I mean, that was what I was able to see from spring one practice to the spring game. Thomas Rush got better and better each practice. You saw Thomas Rush dive and lay out all that 6'3" athletic frame. He breaks up a pass. He leads the gold team with 9 total tackles. Again, for a guy that I was kind of skeptical on because his senior tape wasn't great. He played both ways, a running back and linebacker. He was committed as a running back to a MAC school before he flipped to Minnesota to play linebacker. So I'm thinking to myself, again, how good are his instincts going to be? Now, still, they're not great, but again, you can see that frame, that 6'3" long, athletic, explosive frame, being able to stay with tight ends, being able to cover running backs coming out of the backfield on either wheel routes or into the flats. You know, I was impressed with Thomas Rush. Now, in an ideal world, I'd like to see him redshirt this fall, but knowing that we're going to have to see how Thomas Barber recovers, seeing how Blake Cashman is, can Kamal Martin stay healthy, and then, Julian Huff, he gets two tackles for loss, a sack, and a forced fumble, using him as a blitzing linebacker as well. And Minnesota's got, I mean, we've talked about this, Luke. I don't think it was ever an issue, linebacking depth, but no. I think Thomas Rush and Julian Huff, if they can provide something like they did on Thursday night, I feel a lot better about this linebacking core.
Yeah. I guess the guys that stick out for me, you know, the maroon side, obviously Calvin Swenson tallying 13 tackles. He literally seemed to be everywhere with a couple pass breakups as well. Other guys, you know, I don't know. Kamal Martin was all right. Adam Beck showed up a couple times. So he had the nice pass breakup as well. There weren't a lot of guys that really stuck out to me on the maroon side of the defense otherwise. Anything from you there?
Maroon side, Calvin Swenson is someone that I've tried to talk about every Gopher spring practice notebook because he's been starting at safety the entire spring with Antoine Winfield not getting any reps as the staff's trying to keep him healthy. But Calvin Swenson just keeps being around the football and he keeps making plays. He had 13 total tackles, leads the entire defense on either side. He has 2 pass breakups, tackle for loss, and a sack. Like, the kid is just extremely solid. Now, is he going to be an ideal, you know, potential swing safety? Absolutely. Maybe he's your starting safety, and you put Antoine Winfield into the slot, a.k.a. just like his older father did for so many years for the Minnesota Vikings, arguably becoming one of the best slot corners or nickel corners of all time. And then you have Keandre Thomas and Chris Williamson, the Florida transfer, who didn't play in the spring game on the outside. Because I think that would be my ideal scenario, is Winfield is in the slot, or he kind of just travels with the best playmaker that the opposing offense has. You have Keandre Thomas on the outside as a junior and healthy now. Chris Williamson, the Florida transfer, is hopefully healthy. And then you have Jacob Huff and you have Calvin Swenson there with guys like Adam Beck, as you mentioned. That was another pleasant surprise, seeing Adam Beck close on a few balls to break them up. You know, again, we hadn't seen a lot from Adam Beck this spring, so for him to make a couple of plays there as well, I think that's what you need. But again, you saw on the big plays that the offense was able to generate, you're going against backup guys that I don't think necessarily should be seeing time in a Big Ten game right now.
Right.
So you're looking at guys like Benny Sapp coming in, Terrell Smith coming in, mm-hmm. CJ Smith coming in. I think some of these guys are going to be pressed into early action because behind their starters, there is a severe need for depth, and you saw that Thursday night.
Yeah. Okay. Things that we probably need to touch on. Otherwise, you're going to get some angry tweets. Probably in the trenches, we probably should talk a little bit of defensive line, because that's a concern that was highlighted on the last podcast. I don't feel great about defensive lines still. There are obviously some nice pieces. I think Gary Moore obviously fits a need. He has some experience, one of the rare cases of experience. Royal Silver had a sack, or maybe that was just it was a sack, and he had a half tackle for a loss. But I'm some flashes from defensive ends, but I'm still kind of worried about defensive tackle.
I still am as well. I mean, I want to see more from O.J. Smith, who just got his sixth year of eligibility. Minnesota goes to the NCAA, applies for a sixth year now. In terms of what they – I don't know. Well, I know how they went about it, but, they were able to get it, and I think that's all that matters. So O.J. Smith, the Alabama defensive tackle transfer, is not only going to have 2018 to play, he's going to have 2019. And I think that's big for redshirting some of the guys that are coming in. We talked about how Minnesota signed the best defensive line class according to 24/7 Sports in the internet era. If you're able to let them redshirt, like get them in the weight room for 18 to 24 months, let them build up that strength to go against opposing offensive lines, that is going to be a huge benefit to you down the road. So O.J. Smith, Royal Silver, you saw Nate Umlor, you saw Gary Moore. Again, I think that there's a lot to be determined there, because none of these guys have really played. O.J. Smith really didn't play at Alabama. Royal Silver hasn't played a Division I snap. Nate Umlor played last year as a undersized defensive end. Now he's bulked up and he's moving inside. How does he handle opposing interior offensive linemen opposed to tackles? How does Gary Moore come on as a senior? And then we also have a guy like Noah Hickox, who was able to beat Blaze Andrews for a sack. So, again, I think there's a lot left to be decided there, but we'll see. We'll see. Especially, and then special teams wise, Luke, I know people are also going to send me hate tweets or hate posts on Gopher Illustrated if we don't talk about the atrocious punting. Now, I was watching both Jacob Herbers and Grant Rearsay in warmups, and Jacob Herbers was far superior to Grant Rearsay. I don't know what kind of role Grant Rearsay has for this team right now. And the big thing about specialists, Luke, and you know this as well as anyone, is they can have their confidence shot.
Right.
And then it is such a process to get it back and get it built up and get it even stronger. I just think Grant needs something well to go. He needs something to go right.
Yeah.
As he was, he was doing kickoffs, he was doing punting, he was kicking, and he just didn't seem to be doing well at any of those. So I think Grant's got some things to work out. Again, he is on scholarship, and for him to not be doing a lot of field goal stuff as Minnesota is looking to sign a kicker, I think the writing's kind of on the wall that Grant Rearson needs to kind of figure it out here, because I think as of right now, Jacob Herbers is Minnesota's best option. Now, they are going to add a grad transfer punter from SMU whose name escapes me right now. He took an official visit a few weeks back. We talked about it on Gopher Illustrated. He did commit. But this is a grad transfer punter that, by the way, hasn't punted in a game yet.
Sure. So,
again, as you're trying to replace Ryan Santoso, you're going to need to see much better efforts from the punting game.
Yeah, definitely need to improve there. And you're so right about specialists like kickers and punters. It is such a confidence thing. It's really similar to golf, where it's so much more mental than it is physical in some ways. And it's so routine. It's muscle memory type stuff. It's tough. It's finicky. I don't envy some of those guys, especially in some of the spots. And it's definitely challenging. The one thing that we did miss, Ryan, and you are going to get hate tweets if we don't talk about it, is offensive line. This is a bright spot for one reason only, just purely the depth. Like the fact that you can go two teams and you can have some subs and you don't have to have guys play 120 plays. It was flat out just a blessing to be able to have some depth to be able to play a game.
It is. And after going through 2017 spring ball, where no one was able to stay healthy and Minnesota had four healthy offensive linemen, they were able to kind of divvy things up. Now, they didn't give a ton of reps to somebody like Jared Weiler. He's got nothing to prove. He's very vital to this offensive line. Now, was there too many sacks for some folks. Yes. I know some folks are still very worried about the offensive line. I'm not tremendously worried about it. I've said that all spring. I think that they can get it figured out. Folks were able to see Daniel Fa'alele for the first time. He is enormous, 6'8", 400 pounds. And again, I just think that long term and even short term, I feel okay and above average about the Minnesota offensive line, which, again, if you've been listening to this podcast for a long time, you know how much we've ragged on the offensive line. You know how much we've, again, I just want to see above average offensive line play. And that's something I think we can see from Minnesota this season. I think as Blaze Andrews continues to get more reps, I think he's going to be more than adequate at right guard. And I think he has a very high ceiling. And then you have other guys like, Sam Schluter is going to continue to beat at right tackle. I think Daniel Fa'alele is going to be able to compete sooner rather than later. I think that once he continues to get more into game shape, as he continues to kind of get more into just different things like that, I think he's going to be able to help things along. So I feel pretty good about the offensive line, and pretty good for me means average to above average, which if Minnesota sees that this fall, it's going to be the best offensive line they've seen in like 5 years.
Yeah. And let's keep in mind too, at points last year, we were talking about, okay, how do we get through this game and make sure we don't have to pull a red shirt to play one game, and we don't have to have Nate Wozniak play tackle for the better part of a half, you know? Like, we were talking through that. So the fact that we might not have to have any kind of discussion like that is a large improvement, in my opinion. You've talked about this a little bit. I don't know if this was Twitter, texting back and forth, and or the podcast, but I think Donnell Green has a serious shot to get drafted.
I do as well.
Yeah, it's better than it's been, and I think I don't know. I'm more optimistic than ever, just purely on depth. Competition, breeds improvement, and I can't imagine that it can get much worse than it's been the last couple of years.
And again, listening to this podcast as we kind of wrap things up here, we've been very positive tonight. Absolutely, I think there's a lot of things to be positive about. So, are we predicting that Minnesota is going to the Rose Bowl? No. Do I think Minnesota goes to a bowl game this fall? Absolutely. I think between Tanner Morgan, Vic Biramontes, and Zach Anik said they can figure it out. I think pass catchers can be better. And then if you can have Rodney Smith get 20 to 25 touches a game, I think this offense can do something. Now, it's going to depend on how the secondary reacts, how the interior of the defensive line can hold up against these bigger running teams. But I think 6-7 wins is absolutely attainable. And I think the ceiling continues to grow each year after that as Minnesota's offense gets more and more playmakers and more experience. Because I think if Thomas Rush is any indication of what, we're going to see from this 2018 class that just signed, I think there's a lot to be optimistic about. So we'll have to see how things kind of go.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think at the end of the day, the big thing is, correct me if I'm wrong, you made it through spring practice. I know that Shannon Brooks got hurt before spring practice, but you are in early like conditioning workouts, but you largely made it through spring practice without any major injuries, correct?
Correct.
So that's a success. And hopefully, you've developed some talent and you feel, I at least feel better about certain position groups, between us chatting on the podcast. I feel better than I thought I was. I still thought I was going to be terribly terrified about quarterback. I think I am not necessarily optimistic, but just I'm not terrified anymore. I think I'm at least hesitant to becoming optimistic at quarterback. All in all, it's just I feel better. PJ said he thinks this is a better football team than they had last year. I don't think I can disagree with him there. I mean, we'll see come game one, and maybe when you get to watch more practices, because God knows it's hard for you to formulate any opinions on 20 minutes of stretching.
I agree with you. Like, from day one that I saw of spring ball to the spring game, do I feel better about quarterback? Absolutely, because I had no idea really what to expect.
Right.
I'd heard good things about Tanner Morgan and his progress in the weight room. I'd heard good things about Dak Anixton and Victor Amantes once they got to campus. But I think you finally have legitimate competition at quarterback from guys that have an actual ceiling there. Now, I'm not, when I say ceiling, I'm not saying they're going to go top five in the NFL draft in 2021, but maybe you can be an above average passing quarterback, which at the University of Minnesota hasn't happened in 10 years.
Yeah, or, since Adam Weber.
Since Adam Weber. You know, and again, that was an average to above average passing quarterback. So, again, I feel pretty good about quarterback compared to what I thought I was going to be thinking. Now, I still think that Minnesota needs to find a complement to Rodney Smith. Maybe it's Mohamed Ibrahim, but I really want to see what Bryce Williams or Nolan Edmonds brings. I think Chris Ottman-Bell, as he continues to kind of get used to playing under the lights with thousands of people watching him, will continue to grow and get better each time he's out there. I think Seth Green moving to tight end is going to be a very interesting thing to kind of monitor over the next 4 months before fall camp comes. Can Rashad Bateman be something? Again, and I feel pretty good about the offensive line. Defensive line-wise, I hope that the defensive ends show up like they did in the spring game for fall, because if so, if Minnesota can generate pressure with only four or five guys, that's going to be a huge benefit for this team as they're able to kind of show some help to their secondary. And again, a secondary that still has a lot of question marks for me. I mean, who's that cornerback too alongside Keandre Thomas? I'm going to be very curious to see what happens when Chris Williamson is healthy. But again, from what I saw this spring, I think it's a 6 or 7 win team. But again, we'll see where we're at come fall camp.
Per usual, only time will tell. I think this is probably our last podcast until probably the summer sometime. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll probably do one here in the summer once commitments get rolling in. We'll do just kind of a recruiting thing. We'll see what other news and notes we have.
Yeah.
This will probably be the last one for at least a few weeks here, as I got Europe coming up here in the next few weeks.
So oh, yeah. You have fun with that. We want to thank everybody for listening. Per usual, if you wouldn't mind leaving a review on iTunes or whatever aggregator you use to listen to this podcast, we'd appreciate it. It helps others find the podcast. Also, if you could rate it, that would be great as well. Again, we want to thank you for listening, and go Gophers.